When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our draft countdown series. Tonight, the final episode, The Safeties. We're talking about it with Kevin Ostreicher of Locked On Ravens. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ken. It's exciting. The draft definitely snuck up on us, and I'm honored I can be the last one to kind of round out this whole series for you. I know safety is not necessarily the biggest need the Ravens have, but wouldn't be shocked if they dipped their fingers into this class a little bit.
Yeah, I wouldn't be either, and I think it is not a deep class, and we're going to talk about that with some of the problems in terms of fit for some of these players. But also, the Ravens, I think, not only do they have a substantial need at safety, but they have some really specific needs at safety that they probably need to address. But start with the fact that Marcus Williams and Kyle Hamilton, who should both be back, and certainly we hope Marcus Williams is healthy this year, and Hamilton, of course, because he had assorted minor injuries this last year in terms of sprains and whatnot. They're always minor if they're not yours, right? But we saw Williams suffer as a tackle a little bit, but those guys hopefully will both be back healthy for this year.
Those guys are the keys. They're the keys to this position for Baltimore. Now, what I'm really hoping is that we get this year for Baltimore a full healthy season of Marcus Williams. Was actually very healthy in New Orleans. I believe he only missed 5 or 6 games over his first 5 years there. Then comes to Baltimore, and obviously these first 2 years, he's shown the flashes. That beginning stretch for him last season, I think, was 3 interceptions in 2 games. But then he got injured. Right, yes, in 22. Yep. He had to miss time then, come back. And then this year, obviously, it was the same deal. And Hamilton's just been, I think, everything everybody was imagining when a player of that caliber falls to you at 14. Be everywhere on the field, can use him as a blitzer, can use him everywhere. And I give the Ravens credit for having Geno Stone in there as well and making sure he gets on the field. And obviously we're going to talk about that, Ken, but the Ravens defense, there were a lot of reasons why they were good. Part of that reason was because of the depth they had in multiple positions, safety included. You could easily slot Geno Stone in for Marcus Williams, and for them it worked.
Yeah, I think that's true. And Geno was critical on the back end as a split field safety when Hamilton would move up front. It's one of the big areas where the Ravens need to figure out who their player or players are. I think it's really players in 2024. And Geno, of course, gone. Darryl Worley remains unsigned. He played very well in limited duty. Of course, we all know the 102 snap game he played in week 2 or 3. I think it was maybe against the Colts in week 3. But a remarkable game that he didn't miss any tackles the whole year, which is that's part of the basic job description. And frankly, is an area where Stone wasn't very good after the first few games of the year.
Yeah. And I think for him, just his frame a little bit, I'm not saying he wasn't a willing tackler, but I do think we saw that production at least decrease over the course of the season. And we know, Ken, a couple of years ago, missed tackles were the name of the game. for Baltimore's defense in terms of kind of what they were struggling with. But for Stone, he's someone that was so valuable for them. Obviously, we know he had a career year with interceptions and as a ball hawk. It's going to be an interesting dilemma for Baltimore in terms of how they want to replace that, whether it is with one of the safeties in this draft. Do they go maybe and sign a free agent, or do they trust a guy like Ardarius Washington enough, depending on if they want him in the slot full-time or just as a defensive back, which I think is one of the interesting parts about the safety position, where now so many corners, especially slot guys, can go and play some safety. Safeties can go and play some corner now. So we've started to see, all right, we're just going to label a bunch of guys as defensive backs because of the versatility that everybody has now.
To me, Ardarius Washington is a slot corner and not really a safety. Now we'll see if that changes. And honestly, we'll see when camp starts where the Ravens are playing him then. Are they deciding, you know, that we want to have some backup on the back end? The Ravens actually came up very short on safeties during the year at multiple times. That most notably when Hamilton got ejected for the hit that he was fined for but not suspended for in terms of a helmet-to-helmet shot that might have been in that game against the Colts too, but I'm forgetting exactly. It might have been the Rams, whichever game it was. It was a loss, obviously, for the team to have him missing, and they had other injuries occur at various times of the year, which forced them to move Hamilton back out of that slot position and onto the back end. Obviously, Marcus Williams was out, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I think it's going to be really important for the Ravens to have those extra safeties active on game day that do not force a particular usage of Kyle Hamilton. He is the queen of the chessboard on defense. You need to be able to move him around wherever you want him on a down by down basis. And that means that the Ravens are going to have more safeties healthy and ready to go.
Right. And right now at the position, it's Hamilton and Williams, but then I think that they can stand to essentially almost upgrade that position, depending on, again, where they decide to go. Is it a free agent? Is it a draft pick? But we're going to talk about it as well, Ken, with Darryl Worley, who the Ravens seem to love. He is currently not on the roster at the time. That's according, still unsigned. We're going to see. And Baltimore's tried to fill that role with a bunch of, like, just their depth safety role with a bunch of different guys over the years. Jaron Curse comes in as kind of a bigger safety. That didn't really work out for them. They've tried pure single high guys, just depth guys, and there are multiple you can list off that just didn't work. So I think for the Ravens, everybody expected Geno Stone to leave. I don't think there was any doubt about, okay, well, and I don't even know if the Ravens really offered him. It seems like there's been some cryptic messaging from both Geno Stone and Patrick Queen about, well, oh, well, it's our decision to leave Baltimore. Does that mean that the Ravens didn't offer them a contract? You know, still TBD. I don't know if we're ever going to get that story or not, but Baltimore does have some work to do in the safety room, but that doesn't necessarily mean, oh, it's their biggest need, because obviously Hamilton and Williams, it fills that out. It's about the depth, like you talked about, in making sure that, hey, you know what? If Kyle Hamilton has to miss a few games next year, if Marcus Williams has to miss a few games, you have the player like Geno Stone that you can slide in there, and they don't. Hamilton's a tough player to replace, obviously. You mentioned he's the queen of the chessboard, and it's not very easy to replace that type of talent, but if injuries pop up, you got to do your best. And to do that, you got to have good depth.
By the way, Voss is the one who came up with that originally, but I've been using it from here and there. And I really appreciate that specifically moniker.
For it's him. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's start with the Ravens. The guys they really need, I believe, are on the back end. They need an emergency free safety, which could be Hamilton, but then you've got a forced usage situation. So I'm not in favor of that being the case. I think they need a split field safety to be able to maintain the cover two shell and have Hamilton as the slot. And that's assuming everything's fine. They need that guy. That can be difficult to find. You look at the safeties in this class, there are some who are suited to that role and there are some who are not, as we go through that. And we'll talk about each maybe in terms of what role they could bring. The other thing I think is maybe an underappreciated need. I want you to respond to all these. Maybe I should just give you a chance right there to talk about split field safety and emergency free safety first, because I got a third.
Yeah, sure. We saw Hamilton, when we've seen Hamilton work in the slot and be he's just so physical as a player there, and he's super effective. And especially when you talk about run plays and how he can just shed guys off when he is down in the box and down playing in the slot. We've seen multiple plays of him shedding his blocker, maybe even shedding two blockers if another guy comes over and disrupting. And that's what I really like about Baltimore's secondary as a whole. And I think they kind of embraced that fully last offseason, is they're just super physical. And it makes it difficult for teams to run, and especially on the outside. If you want to get there, obviously you had guys like Patrick Queen have that sideline-to-sideline speed, but it's about Marlon Humphrey and that physicality, Hamilton and his as well. And then in terms of the free safety, again, Stone gave you that range, and he gave you that versatility there as well. But to me, having that free safety is really important, especially a guy that can play single high, that can give you the range. Baltimore's been trying to find that player for a really long time. I think with Marcus Williams, they have found some of that. But to me, again, the health for Marcus Williams over the past two seasons, you have to take that into account. And I don't think at this point you can say, yeah, we're going to get away with a seventh round rookie there who is a developmental prospect because we're relying on a full 17 of Marcus Williams. You can't have that conversation right now. You need to have the depth just in case a guy misses a game or two. But to me, I think Hamilton, if we're going back there for a second, works at his best when he's able to, one, be moved around, but two, is able to play his physical game. And I think I love him in the slot personally. Like, I know he plays everywhere and he's so good, but I mean, it's just so rare to find a player like that. And I can't get over the fact he fell to 14, honestly.
He's unbelievably valuable there. The way I term it is he's the best horizontal defender in the NFL right now. There's really nobody like him. Derwin James is the last guy who was a little bit like him in terms of being able to rush the quarterback, take away the strong side in a lot of ways. But being a block shedder and a tackler like he is, and always kind of by definition playing on the strong side of the field, there are 3x2 and 2x2 YY combinations where he might not be on the true strong side of the field. But most of the time, it's tight end, slot, and outside Z receiver on that right side of the field, because most teams are right-handed. Hamilton is there, and he provides you all sorts of value on the side of the field where you have three eligible receivers. Anything you try and do of the Bengals-esque nature, and Burrow has that because he doesn't have great arm strength, really needs to get the ball out quickly to the outside a lot against the Ravens. That's something that has been extremely positive inside the division in terms of a big weapon to have Hamilton and his value on the strong side, their ability to defeat blocks.
Yeah, there were multiple plays even last season against Dave's North opponents. I mean, the Bengals try to work out Ja'Marr Chase into space, and obviously, there's no Deontay Johnson anymore in Pittsburgh, but you know, they try to work those guys out into space, and teams can struggle if they have cornerbacks or safeties or defensive backs down in the box that can get overmatched by either blocking receivers or tight ends going out there. And just the Ravens defense as a whole, Hamilton and Humphrey, honestly, probably that group is just being super physical up front and not allowing that stuff to develop.
The other sneaky need, which I wanted to get to, is dimeback. Now, the Ravens have not used a dime back the last couple of years since Roquan got here because they've been a committed nickel team. But we don't honestly know who Trenton Simpson is yet. And I think Trenton Simpson could be good across the board, could be a three-down linebacker, and you think he's going to get that opportunity because Orr came from a three-down system under Pease, and he obviously is the last 2 years have been a three-down system with McDonald. But in truth, if Simpson were to fail as a coverage guy, I kind of hope the fuse would be pretty short and the Ravens would have what is a fairly easy position to fill from a safety to get a veteran in who is wily and understands coverage, has those portable skill sets that you bring up front in the dime. The Ravens have always had great dime backs in their history that are a remarkable run, and Ozzie has always understood how to get a cheap one, with a round six pick being the most he would ever pay for it. And if you look back at the history of Ravens dimebacks, just look at the sixth round and you've got it. You know, it's Chad Williams and Ralph Staten in round seven and Haruki Nakamura and Anthony Levine is a UDFA and Ralph Staten, I give you Ralph Staten already as a seven. But anyway, Corey Harris is a cheap free agent. They've just been able to do it extremely cheaply. And I do believe that position would be really easy to fill. The harder position to fill, and the position the team is often without, is without a second free safety that can truly back up their number one. And I think it might honestly on the team right now, Daryl Worley isn't signed, but I think it could be Daryl Worley if we moved on. It could be Hamilton, and honestly, that's a very restricted usage of Hamilton that would I think hamstring the Ravens defensively to be playing that way. So I hope they find the free safety, the dime back, a sneaky but secondary need. They can actually find that during the season if they decide Simpson isn't working out. But we've talked about some of the possibilities of what they need to go into camp on the 90-man roster. I would like to see six safeties with the plan that they might have as many as five on the initial 53 and at least four on game days.
Yeah, that checks out. I have them around five or six. I've kind of run through roster numbers a little bit, and I think that makes the most sense, especially with some of the uncertainty. And to me, I think, Chuck Clark was obviously a big use of the dime back and everything they did, and that's probably like the most recent example before Roquan got to town. But to me, and I've talked to a lot of Pittsburgh people, and the reason that they bring in guys like Deshaun Elliott, they brought in guys like Deshaun Elliott this offseason, everything was because Minkah Fitzpatrick was hamstrung in terms of what he was asked to do with the Steelers because of, one, all the injuries they went through last year. I think it was last year, right? DeMonte Casey got suspended for the season after that.
Safety.
Right. So Minkah Fitzpatrick had to do all this stuff that he wasn't originally asked to do, and it was not the role that he was envisioned in when Pittsburgh brought him in and what made him so good early in that Pittsburgh tenure. So when you're talking about hamstringing Hamilton, I agree with you, where if you're putting him as, like, I guess your primary dime guy, it limits what he can do, and it almost not eliminates, but it takes away a lot of what we just talked about in terms of how good he can be in the slot and how good he can be moving around. So the thing with Simpson is an interesting thing too, Ken, because I agree with you where I think there's a lot of hype around him, and I personally think it can work out in a really good way for Baltimore. But we've seen over the years, the Ravens sometimes just don't necessarily, like, a rookie will be favored to win a job, and then there's some sort of veteran insert in there. So a couple of years ago, the right guard position, I forget who the player was, but yeah, it's like DJ Fluker gets that job. I still can't remember who it was, but Fluker gets the job. I wouldn't be shocked if it's like a Trenton Simpson, Malik Harrison tandem early in the season, and then they maybe give the job to Simpson as the year goes on. But then in those safety looks or in those linebacker looks, as you talk about, if Simpson is not cutting it in coverage, if Harrison is not cutting it in coverage, I think you have to get a guy that can do that for you, because Baltimore has been burned by running backs and tight ends over the course of their franchise history, especially recently. And while I think Patrick Queen improved there, it still wasn't necessarily wonderful. Mm-hmm. So I think that if they can find a guy and they get back to those dime linebackers, it's not about you with Roquan, you can't take him off the field, but with Patrick Queen, it was kind of the same thing, where why wouldn't you play both those guys together? But now with Queen gone, I think there are a lot more options for Baltimore, especially with maybe bringing back the dime position.
All right, so when I'm talking about hamstringing Hamilton, just for the thing, I'm talking about moving him to the back end. I'd much rather have a slot than dime, because I think there's other people who can play dime. It's much harder to get a safety who can play slot the way Hamilton does. But I really don't want him forced into a back end role. If he goes there on certain downs, that's fine. I don't want to be forced to be Marcus Williams' replacement at free safety specifically.
Right. That's the one. But I agree, where you don't want to hamstring him anyway. Worst case scenario.
Now, this being the class it is, I kind of want to get on record early on this and say, I think this is a draft where DaCosta may finally stray outside the Power Five and get a safety from a small school. It's a very weak class, and it looks to me like if you want to replace a player cheap, if you want to find a split safety late in the draft, or a potentially even developmental free safety late in the draft, you do it from a small school. And that's one of the things we haven't seen from EDC, is a lot of small school picks. Kind of surprising to me, given he got his reputation with a lot of the great small school scouting he did in picking up players like Webb and Brandon Williams and Matt Judon, for example, Sealer as well.
Yeah. And that, to me, I think too, is the Ravens, and you mentioned it over the Ozzie tenure, of there would be probably one or two guys from small schools every single year, and there maybe wasn't a lot of work done on them, but the Ravens kind of made their bread and butter with a lot of those picks. But, and I don't have the exact numbers, Ken, maybe you do, but
looking it up now.
Yeah, you're right. We haven't really seen that from DaCosta. And while this safety class is not necessarily super deep, it's not one of the best I've ever seen, to put it nicely, but I think there is some value, because even though people look at the position and they see, okay, Hamilton's here, Marcus Williams is here, Geno Stone is the position they have to replace. And again, people look at the Power Five as the flashy schools, as the flashy prospects, guys who get national TV time. But you look back at Baltimore's franchise history, and I agree with you, it is surprising that we haven't seen DaCosta make more of those picks, especially considering how many were made over Ozzie's tenure, when obviously DaCosta had a big role in it.
Okay, so I believe since 2019, when he came in, he has not taken a single non-FBS player. But he's only dipped a few times into non-Power Five players. So, for example, Brandon Stevens, SMU, when Brandon Stevens was there in 21, were they in the Sun Belt that year, or were they in the? Coastal Carolina. Isaiah Likely is an example, and other than that, they really have not gone outside the Power Five to get picks. And I know it comes up once in a while. You know, he'll talk about the level of competition. There's a couple linemen this year, and Amagaji in particular from Yale, who looks like a giant among dwarves in terms of his blocking. You know, it's not even fair. You wonder, you know, how can you even judge this guy based on what he's done at that level when he's, you know, facing a lot of CPAs, whose defensive ends that look like CPAs next to him. So,
right. And so, just for the record, SMU was AAC until 2023. They're ACC now. So,
okay, very good. That would be his one outside the Power Five, I believe he's taken, other than the Coastal Carolina pick, right, for Lakewood. So, anyway, let's go ahead and get into this. I really hope Eric brings back a small school pick this year, especially considering they have 2 sevens. And that's where, you know, a hidden player could be picked, and it could end up that's an FBS player by certain, but it also can be a small school player, and it would be exciting if he found that hidden gem there again. If I hear a name from a school that I'm just not aware they had a prospect, that's the point where I'm going to get really excited on day three of this draft in terms of picking up a guy that nobody knew about.
Yeah, it's been a while. I feel like for me too, it's like a rush a little bit of like, you know, all of this draft coverage happens and the small school guys don't get enough love. And I think if you're a small school player, the organization, I think you, one of them at least you want to go to is Baltimore, because of all this, it's almost like the undrafted thing as well, where there's a history with Baltimore and small school prospects, much like there's a history of Baltimore and undrafted guys. So I'd be excited too.
All right, wonderful. Well, let's jump right into it with the top 10, and we'll start, you're the guest, of course, with your number 10 safety on your list.
All right, well, I'm going with Nadrion Taylor-Demerson out of Texas Tech. To me, now he's if you want to call him a little smaller, 5'10", 197, has the 4.41 speed, 38-inch vertical as well. Now, the speed is some of the allure that I like here, but he also, with his pedal back, he's very disciplined with his eyes, doesn't let that really take away from his game too much. And to me, he's actually a bit physical as well, which I like, because he's able to wreck a lot of concepts at multiple different levels. It's not just one thing for him. He's someone who's been rising up the ranks, I feel like, a lot. I feel like he wasn't getting a lot of buzz, and then he's kind of been rising up. But to me, the offseason he has had and some of the testing numbers he's put on, I think have risen his stock pretty dramatically.
Okay, he's my number 4 guy. So we're going to start off with some big differences here. I would see him as a value to Ravens in round 3, and I'm gonna get into this because I don't think he's still gonna be there at that point. You mentioned the testing numbers. He really is one of the best athletes in the class. He did turn 24 already, so that's one of the knocks on him, is he's a little bit older than some of the other guys. Why is that important? Well, for second contract value. I don't care at all about a running back who's a little older, honestly. I think that, you know, you might recover from injury a little quicker if you're 21, but my desire ever to sign a running back on a second contract is almost nothing. So right away I'm thinking, you know, we care about the first contract, not the second. And there are definitely some players who fall into that class in this draft. And Maybe Taylor Demerson is one of those in terms of being a guy who you care about the first contract more than anything. I've got a few numbers that I got for every safety in this. So he had 9 missed tackles. That was 10.2%. 6.3 yards per target, which is quite good for a guy who's played a lot on the back end. There are some strong safeties. More that play is downhill, they tend to have a lower yards per target. And here's the funny thing about Dadrian Taylor Demerson, though. Prior to 2023, he had a much worse yards per target career, around 10, and his career number is at 8.94 even after this last season. So that's something to be very concerned about. If 2023 was kind of a mirage. 3 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, 65 opposition passer rating, which is quite good. So you certainly would take that. Breaks extremely well on the football. The tape I watched, the cut up was of the TCU game. It included 2 interceptions he made, only 1 counted, but 2 interceptions he made, both were pure free safety overthrow interceptions. Love to see that. That's the don't over hammer the body, don't go for the body when you go for the ball kind of interceptions. Deshaun Elliott always went for the body. Geno Stone always went for the overthrow. Or did a high percentage of the time, let's put it that way. That's what I look for in a center field safety. It's one of the reasons why I think he's one of the best free safety prospects in a very barren class. He would be terrific, I think, in a split field role that relies on rotational skills as well, because he can come downhill. Really good zone defender. And I think he'd be a guy that I would trust in that split role. If Ravens could somehow get him at number 93, I think it would be real value. I don't think he'll still be there, unfortunately, and there's no way in hell the Ravens can take him at 62. So good value in round 3. The Ravens just may not have the possibility. Probably the chance of taking him at 93 probably increases if the Ravens are able to trade back and pick up an extra pick in that second and third round this year as opposed to resetting the next year.
And I think, you know, looking back on, you know, where I was with this, I think I knocked him more so due to the age a little bit. But when it's, I guess when you're thinking about it, when you talk about where the Ravens are right now.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And what their window is. I mean, I think it's a little different when you're talking about certain positions. And if Taylor Demison is able to come in there and provide you quality NFL snaps early, as opposed to being such a developmental guy, I think it works for him. So I might have knocked him a little too much for the age. I think that might be where I was with it.
Well, it's very normal that we would have some differences like this. It seemed like we were doing a lot of with Gabe Ferguson, the Interior Defensive Line article, Interior Defensive Line pod came out, and we were like 10-6, 10-6, 9-4, you know, 9-4. It's like we had – it's more fun because then we each talk about what we're seeing, and I appreciate some difference of opinion here and not having the same all the way through. All right. So, that takes care of your number 10 guy, right? And my number 10 guy is Cole Bishop of Utah. The Utah safeties, both looking pretty good on most scouting reports this year. Bishop, 6'2", 206. He's really got the safety build, but 29¾-inch arms is a pretty significant problem at the contested catch point versus larger receivers. That's an issue. 4.45 40, there aren't a lot of guys that this fast. I think he might be the second fastest safety in this draft. Had good jumps. His 2023 stats, 9 missed tackles, 13%. By the way, the median rate of missed tackles for a safety this year, and this was of 221 guys, I believe, who had a certain snap requirement that I put in. I don't remember, it was half of it or 20% of the maximum snaps, but whichever it was, I just wanted a consistent group. And it was 13.8%, I believe, was the median number. So 13, he's okay. 6.5 yards per target, that's fine. And a 67.8 opposition passer rating. Instincts, in my opinion, are probably not good enough to play a split field safety. Definitely not good enough to be the single high guy. I'd feel very scared if Cole Bishop were in there replacing Marcus Williams for a game. So I don't really see that. Really a strong safety only. And unfortunately, that's part of the reason I dropped it down. I'm drafting my list for the Ravens. And in so doing, Cole Bishop being a pure strong safety, he could fill a dime back role for the Ravens. But, you know, if he's a strong safety only, then he's going to compete for playing time with Hamilton. And he'd be of less use in that spot, obviously, than a lot of other people. He's honestly, I'm not even sure he's a great candidate to play dime, despite his size. But the Ravens have made this is one thing I'll say. The Ravens have made a lot of safeties that are mediocre or from small schools or real questionable talents. They see traits and they can make them into good safeties. They have failed occasionally, and people are going to throw Matt Elam in my face in terms of when it's gone wrong. But the guys they picked in the lower rounds, they've had an incredibly high hit rate with, and you know it's. There's a reason for it. So I think hopefully the Ravens will be able to get it. If they got Bishop in day three, I'd be fine with it. I don't think he'll still be around, but my value range for Bishop would probably be in round 6. Now he may well be gone in round 4, but that's my value range for the Ravens. If he drops that far, then it's okay. Bigger.
Right. In terms of where I have him, I think like mid 4th to mid 5th is I think where like value wise I have him for teams that are looking. Do you want me to say where he is on my list?
Sure.
Yeah. So he's 6 for me. Mm-hmm. I like the physical profile, and I think he is fluid enough in coverage. But again, he's not the type of backup free safety that you're looking for. The physical profile and all thing. But to me, I like the run support that he gives. I'm mm-hmm. not looking at him as a player that's going to be on the back end and use that, because that's just not really what his game is. I think to me, his value is coming up and run support, deconstructing those blocks. And so I think that that is a value for Baltimore, but we're in agreement where I think more so you have to get the Geno Stone thing first, the replacement first, and Bishop's profile doesn't necessarily fit that for me. So I think he's a good prospect. That's why I have him at six. But Ravens-wise, I think there are other guys I'd value over him.
All right, very good. Let's go to your number nine guy then.
My number nine is Kalen Bullock from USC. So 6'2", 188. He's taller, but to me, the ball skills there are really important for what Baltimore could be looking for. Not great in run support, so we're kind of flip-flopping where, you know, we talk about a great run support player. With Bullock, not so much. But he's an explosive athlete, someone that with his deep speed as well, the range is something Baltimore, I think, again, when you're talking about Geno Stone replacement, you could be looking for with him. The playmaking upside, I think, is also tremendous. So I think to me, it's about where the Ravens value him, and he fits what Baltimore is looking for. And I know that the run support, that's where I knocked him a little bit, because the run support was not very good at all. But the coverage traits he has, I think, put him in a range where I'd be totally fine with Baltimore nabbing him early day three, somewhere around that range.
Fourth round pick, yeah. You're saying. Okay. I'm in a similar position. I've got him at number six. For Bullock, I think he's more of a free safety candidate. And I think there's some things to bet on here. 448 speed, turns 21 in April. I don't remember if it's passed or not, or if it's right around the draft. I think it might be like the 30th or something. He turns 21, but it doesn't matter. He'll be 21 playing his first NFL season. That's a lot to build on potentially. His tackling has a bad reputation, but when you actually look at the results, it's not that bad. I would say, looking at the film, there were times when he does not approach the pile. You can call it a career decision. It's probably actually a coach's decision that the USC coaches didn't feel like they could afford to lose Kalen Bullock and still compete. But they told him not to. And if you look back to the 2000 Ravens, by the way, they told McAllister and Stark, stay away from the pile. And it's really apparent if you watch 2000 video again. So anyway, that's something that comes in there. Yeah, one of the things that wasn't – he has a good yards per target number at 6.4, particularly for a back-end guy, because a lot of the completions are going to be longer for a guy like that. But a 97.0 opposition passer rating is not particularly exciting. Did get burned for some touchdown, five of them in total. Good instincts in single high, and I think that's what you really want more than anything else if you want a split-field safety. The responsibility is less significant. You want a guy who knows where the ball is going, who knows how to pass people off in zone, who knows people how to pass people off high and low, knows how to play the high low rules. How about just that simple in terms of where they have to be, in terms of covering for the routes in front of them? So that's what I would want from him. I think if you take him, it's a bet on improving a young player, and he would have a learning curve in terms of getting ready for the NFL, and some of it would be by fire, I believe, in 2024. Now, it could be he comes to the Ravens, play special teams only, and Darryl Worley is the split safety. But if that you're going to have injuries because safeties, defensive backs, period, get hurt, and I would be very surprised if he didn't see significant playing time before the end of the year if the Ravens drafted him. I think, again, the fourth round is probably where he drops into the value range for me, and that's where the Ravens have some picks where I think they can finally make some choices other than the greatest needs, unless they pick up additional picks earlier.
Yeah, and to me, the age conversation is so interesting because I agree with you where it's a little bit of the learning curve for him. But so if Marcus Williams is to miss some time and you're throwing Bullock into the fire, how much do you trust him in that role? Would you rather have somebody else? So your plan.
I look at it this way, Kevin, when you ask me that question, you remember you might be too young, but do you remember the last scene in Ghostbusters where they decide they have to cross the streams and they might destroy the earth, but they're at least going to have a chance to destroy the Safe Park Marshmallow Man?
I don't remember it, but I think I know where you're going with it.
Okay. But anyway, Bill Murray, he says, I love this plan. I'm happy to be a part of this plan. You know, it's like there's no other choice. Okay. He's going to get his baptism by fire if that happens. And, you know, I guess there would be another alternative that you'd move Worley to be your free safety, and then you'd have him still play a split field. But he's going to get some form of play by fire if that were to happen.
Yeah. 100%. I think, you know, he's a really good prospect, a lot of potential. But again, I think it's more so the thing that Baltimore's looking for, but the run support does have to improve.
All right, let me move on to my number nine guy then, who's the other Utah safety, Sione Vaki. Let me get that right there. 5'11", 210, 29 and an eighth inch arms. Always an issue for a safety to have shorter arms. We've seen this, by the way, be a problem for the Ravens cornerbacks, most notably for Pepe recently, in terms of short arms really being something he had to work around in a big way. It's very difficult for him, obviously. 4.62 40 for Vaki, so not an ideal athletic profile. He's a converted running back. And I think that, you know, that topic comes up from time to time. Whenever they say something like that, it always sounds like they're making an excuse for the player. Sometimes there's a portable set of skills there. And I think that's true of Leggett, the South Carolina receiver, because he's coming from a running back background that I think people are hoping will be A.J. Brown, you know, that you all of a sudden get as a receiver. I don't see a real positive in Vaki being a converted running back, but it is what it is. Missed eight tackles in 23, 7.5 yards per target, and 88 opposition passer rating. Nothing there really screams out, you got to take me. He had an outstanding, though, 2022. Allowed just 5 yards per target and missed just two tackles. He's got a big frame at 5'11", 210, but has not great speed or length, both of which can cause NFL limitations. Finds the ball well in the air on tips. That was one of the things that really shows up on tape, is you see a guy who does not lose focus during the tip drill. And I love to see that from a safety who's going to be down in the box. And maybe Vaki is a guy that the Ravens can rotate down off too high, maybe use more robbers, maybe use more matchup zone where his responsibility shifts underneath and you get some second man of the ball opportunities. There was some of that in his background as well. Good horizontal pursuit player. 4.62 is good enough for that. And obviously, you know, when we're talking about getting a guy in round five or six, where is the value range for Vaki for me, you get a four unit core special teams player in addition to a safety.
Yeah, I think for me, Vaki's more of a special teams guy in terms of, at least early on. And you mentioned the tip drill. I mean, Kyle Hamilton did the trip drill to himself in that Cleveland game, the first drive of the game. So it happens. And I think when people, I think that is devalued, Ken, personally, where people are like, oh, why does it matter that he can focus on the ball? It's hard. It's a really hard thing. And especially Baltimore's defensive line, and this goes back a while, and especially recently, they're good at getting their hands on the football and tipping that ball in the air. Matt Abike, Travis Jones, Michael Pierce is really good at it. Brent Urban, obviously. There are a lot of tip drills, and we've seen, I mean, there are countless tip drills we've seen. Guys don't focus on the ball. They're, you know, wondering where the ball is, like where am I looking? That to me is an underrated, valuable trait. Now, to me, he's not on my list. He was in my honorable mention too, which I know we're going to get to. But I still like him if it's a flyer on day three, middle. The Ravens also, I don't think he's going to be available by the time they get to their 200s picks. They have three right now in the 200s. I feel like it's more of a pick you'd have to make in the fifth or sixth, like you said. But I still think he can be a valuable player in the way the kickoff rules have changed and the way that special teams is valued by Baltimore. I think we're going to start to see not only the Ravens, but a lot of teams start to draft based off of that. We've already seen the signings happen all across the league.
All right. Yeah. Oh, Deontay Hardy here for certain. Yeah. Let's move on and talk about your number eight guy then.
All right. My number eight guy is Tyke Smith out of Georgia. Now, this is a player. The frame, I think, is going to cause him some issues at the NFL level. He's someone that, It's almost like having an additional linebacker in some senses, but it's a smaller frame again. He has the strength to take on some blockers, disrupt some pass catchers, especially in the underneath game. He's strong, but the functional height and length can be a little difficult, especially when you're talking about down the field. So I would probably pencil him in more if you're looking for a linebacker type player. This would be the guy you're looking for. Now, I know that we've talked about it. The reason why he's a little lower on my list is because I also value the free safety type, the single high type over the dime linebacker. But I think he plays like an NFL player. It's just going to be interesting to see. I mean, I think it's more sub packages for him. And Some teams value that more than others. I think the Ravens could value that. Maybe special teams guy. I like Tyke Smith, but the fit is interesting to me.
All right. He's number five on my list. I like him a lot too. He's got 31 5/8-inch arms, which if I look at all my measurements here is probably one of the longer ones. So he's okay there. 4.46 speed is good for this class. He did turn 23 in February, which makes him a little bit older than some of the other guys, but he's in the middle. He's not one of the oldest guys in the group. 10 missed tackles, 13% last year is okay. 3.7 yards per target, which is unbelievable. And it's only 5.2 yards per target for his career. So he's had a great career at Georgia. I know there is a great defense around him helping him, but there aren't just a lot of completed passes in there. 3 TDs, 4 interceptions this last year at a 50 opposition passer rating. There's a cornerback who's unknown in this draft, or largely unknown anyway, had him out of Tennessee, who had a quarterback rating of 7 for the entire year, 7.0. Anyway, Tyke Smith at 50.0 and 69.3 career has been outstanding in that way. Plus ball skills, 4 interceptions, 2 other passes, defenses last year, 7 interceptions over the last 2 years. He's played 51 games between West Virginia and Georgia and made a number of tackles for loss. So 21.5 tackles for loss, 2 forced fumbles, indicative of a fine downhill player, got a medical flag for a previous ACL. You don't want that, obviously. That is probably the biggest concern and why I had him as low as I did. But, you're going to get a core of special teams players. You always do with these safeties. He's only been penalized twice in the last 4 seasons. So he's not a guy who picks up a lot of grabbiness flags. Usually those are the guys who are getting beat. They're really good corners. They have almost no flags in this class, for example, which is very cool. Like Kool-Aid McKinstry has almost never been flagged, which wouldn't necessarily be obvious because, you know, he's forced to play on an island from time to time. But, the good ones, they just don't need to be beat, or they don't find themselves in a position where they don't trust their makeup speed at the college level.
Right. And I think, you know, we and not that Marlon isn't a good player because he is, but Marlon is a little grabby. We know he can get a little physical and hold a little bit. But again, it's just a matter of, for me, Tyke Smith is someone that I think can fit a multitude of different roles for Baltimore. And yeah, I forgot to mention the ACL tear as well, the ACL injury. So that's something that, especially coming out of the draft, is not great, but I think it could potentially provide value. I see Tyke Smith. And, you know, different mocks have him mocked literally all over the place. I've seen 3rd round. I've seen 5th round. I have him like as a 3rd to 4th round guy personally. I think the Ravens, if he's available, maybe 113. I don't know if he'll be there, but I feel like that'd be a great pick right around there.
Yeah, I think that's right about right. 113 or 130, I think, is their next pick in that round. Yep. I'd take him at either one of those. It would depend on the board entirely. There's a whole lot of guys who might drop to 113 and be enticing to the Ravens. They've got a lot of options potentially at that point. It's probably one of the really the pivotal points of this draft is who they get to take at that pick, or maybe who they get to take at the double of 93 and 113. So Tyke Smith is a possibility, but since it's not the highest position of need, it wouldn't surprise me if they tried to wait and see if it worked out. And I think his ACL, by the way, might have been 1 year ago or 2 years ago, one of the other.
He's played I can't remember exactly, but the Ravens were actually in that similar position 2 years ago with Daniel Falele. I think he was, 108, if I'm not mistaken.
6 picks in the round,
Right. I took a trip down memory lane today when we're recording this and put out all the Ravens 4th round picks. I got the 2022, and it was just a laundry list of guys. But that's where it is, where 113 is a really valuable pick because – there are a lot of players that are expected to be taken on day 2 that just aren't, and they fall into that right beginning of the 4th round, so right around 115 or anywhere from like 105 to 1, or I don't know when the last pick is going to be, but right up until 120, I think, is when those guys fall off the board. So the Ravens have an opportunity to get really good value with that pick, and I think Tyke Smith could be one of them.
All righty. I think we're up to my number 8 guy, right?
Yep.
Okay, we're going at about the rate these have gone, so they always take a little bit longer, which is cool. That is Malik Mustafa of Wake Forest. I saw Daniel Jeremiah had him mocked the Ravens in, I think, the 3rd round. Not happening, as far as I can see. There were some things about him that I wasn't really thrilled about. But he's 5'10", 209, 30 and an eighth inch arms, 452 at his pro day. So you got to kind of look at that with a jaundiced eye and wonder if that might really be 457 or 459.
Yeah.
But it does have great jumps, a 41 and a half inch vertical, 10'6" broad, 22 on the bench, and he's 22 in June. That's a really great combination. Now, 22 benches with 30 and an eighth inch arms is not like 22 bench with 34 and a half inch arms, which sometimes we'll see from a lineman. But on the other hand, he's a safety. He's not carrying as much weight there also. So you got mitigating factors in both directions. I think that bench number is quite good for a safety. 11 missed tackles this last year, 6.0 yards per target, and a 79 opposition passer rating. Good, you know, solid across the board, nothing tremendously spectacular for a draftable player. He's a downhill safety who is, I would term as a good but not great tackler. Does not really have the ideal split field traits, but he does. I'll tell you what he does, and this is whenever you see downhill tacklers, one of the big uses, if you want to keep Hamilton on the field, which usually the Ravens actually put Mollett on the field in an obvious passing down. But if you want to keep Hamilton in the slot on a tight end, say on third down, you want to have guys who can defend the sticks on third and seven, third and eight. That pass will often go short of the sticks. You want to have guys who know how to line up, know where they are positionally, know how to tackle relative to their spot on the field. And Mustafa could be that guy. I think he plays way too much to the midsection, watching the film, as opposed to playing the football. So he's not trying to play center field. He's not trying to play for the overthrow. People who play for the midsection aren't the tip ball guys. So they're worried about absolutely destroying that receiver they're going after, dislodging, separating him in the football. I think the Ravens, you know, might in time be able to make Mustafa into a good back end safety. It's a very weak safety class. He's on the list probably in part because of that. And again, this is a place where it wouldn't surprise me if somebody else likes Mustafa a lot more. And if Daniel Jeremiah does, then some other team probably picks up on it too. And then the Ravens pivot and they have a small school guy with the traits they like. And they say, okay, well, Mustafa wasn't perfect either, but this guy can come in and do some of these things and be the split field guy that is more fitted to our needs than a Mustafa. Anyway, not a guy I dislike by any stretch. He is number eight on my list. I just think, you know, he's more there for the class's lack of depth. And to me, he's a fifth or sixth round pick. That's where I'd place him in this. How do you have him, Mark?
Yeah, for me, he's my number seven guy. So we're pretty close on where he is. Definitely would label him as an enforcer. Someone as we talk about who likes to go out there and just level guys as opposed to trying to play for the football. I think to me, he's a player that I would be fine with Baltimore taking anywhere in the, like a day three, essentially. I think to me, another team will probably like him more. I agree with you, but you know, doesn't always get the most in coverage. Again, I think he's more of a player that it's kind of a deal. I was between him and Tyke Smith, like flip-flopping between seven and eight, but I like him enough to where I'd be fine with Baltimore taking him, but I think there are better fits for what the Ravens need right now.
All right, fair enough. So we made it through your number seven effectively because Mustafa was your number seven, right?
Yes, exactly.
I'll tell you what, we'll break it here. We'll come back for part two and Kevin will join us again. But Kevin, tell us, if you would, what you guys are working on at Locked On Ravens now.
Yeah. So we are a 5 day a week Ravens podcast. Supposed to do bonus content as well. So anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, in audio form, we are also in video form as well. A lot of pre-draft stuff, obviously, as the draft is sneaking up on us here. But we do 5 days a week, even in the dog days of summer, when there's not a bunch going on, even before all the workouts began. I know we got the first batch of that this past week, but it's a lot of exciting stuff. And then obviously during the season, we will be going live after games. We go live after every piece of Ravens big news. So it's been a big journey on Locked On Ravens for me. Tonight will be my 1,230th consecutive episode. So it's been a fun ride and I'm looking forward to more of it.
Very good. I've got to look at how many episodes we got here on film study at this point, but I think that's, you've got me beat. other folks out there who would like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open. We've got three series we're going to be working on. The first is anything has to do with the draft or shorts that are specific in nature and you'd like to be up with, DM me. Always open. You get through to me. I'll get back to you very quickly about your idea. I'll talk it through with you and see if there's a show there that we can get a small amount of content and talk about it at a fair amount of depth. That's the goal of these shows. Number two, we have the recollection series. If you have a Raven you'd like to talk about from the past, give me a DM on there. Reserve your player. We're going to be starting up those recordings again after the draft. They're part of providing coverage every day of the week, much as Kevin does. And we'll be doing that. The third that I'm just talking about now for the first time today is the two-player series, which will be coming out. If you have an interest in doing it, I'll put your name on a list. And can't make promises about that because that is an invite-only thing. But we have 25 to 30 pairs of players we talk about, one offense and one defense. The goal is to give as many people as possible an opportunity to talk about cross-sectionally some position groups. We'll have position group shows that come up as camp rolls on, for example, but this is your opportunity to talk about two particular players. You don't pick them. I in fact, pick the pairings, and you'll get to select from a list. But if you want to be on the list of people who'd like to do one of those, send me a DM, and I'll get you on that right away. Kevin, I really appreciate you coming on to talk safety.
Always appreciate you, Ken. Thanks so much for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.